the nation's capital. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, our program today is on family reunification, and it's an important topic. Criminologists from around the country are discussing this, and to find out what family reunification really means, at our microphones today, Wanda Tolliver. She is the Interim Deputy Director of Program Operations for the Child and Family Services Agency in Washington, D.C., www.cfsa.gov, www.cfsa.gov. Wanda Tolliver, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I did this program on the television side of D.C. Public Safety. And again, if people are interested in what we do, it's www.media.cisosa.gov, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, a federal parole and probation agency serving Washington, D.C. I did a television show, and the television show focused on what family reunification is, because the more I talk to my own people within the criminal justice system, the more they seem to be confused about what family reunification means. So what does family reunification mean?
Okay. So when you talk about family reunification, you're talking about when children have been removed from their family of origin, which is their birth family. Mm-hmm. They have been removed and brought into the foster care system. Mm-hmm. At that point, decisions are made, what will it take in order for them to be reunified with their family?
Okay.
So that's what we're referencing when we say family reunification.
But in this case, in terms of the criminal justice system, it also seems to mean people in prison staying in contact with loved ones in the community, family in the community, and it also seems to mean some emphasis on what happens to the children that they leave behind, correct?
Absolutely. And so what that entails is, if parents are incarcerated, how do their children remain connected to them, mm-hmm. in spite of the fact that they're not in their physical custody, but how do they maintain that emotional connection?
Right.
So that is also a part of the family reunification. And historically, Leonard, it has been known that once children entered the child welfare system, and if parents were incarcerated, they were forgotten.
Right. And that's a big concern. I mean, we have 2 million human beings on any given day locked up. Mm-hmm. We have 1.5 million in prison and another 500,000 in jails. Now, there is a huge turnover over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. So we have 2 million human beings who are behind bars. The research seen from the Urban Institute seems to indicate that the more contact they, the ones who stay, have with family, with pro-social people from the community, the better they do upon return to the community, correct?
That's correct. And it's a win-win for both the children, mm-hmm. and for the parents as well. Mm-hmm. Being able to stay connected to their children, mm-hmm. It's just a win-win. It motivates the parents to do what they need to do in order to be successful, and it gives the children an opportunity to realize that even though my parents are not physically here, I still have that connection. And that has been proven over time that they have better development and they have better outcomes.
I spent 14 years with the Maryland Department of Public Safety, and we had 30 prisons throughout the state of Maryland. Mm-hmm. One of the prisons up in Hagerstown held a family reunification day, mm-hmm. Where the individual inmate would spend virtually the entire day in a courtyard that was set up, you know, barbecue stands and try to make it as family-friendly, mm-hmm. as possible, picnic tables, umbrellas, mm-hmm. try to keep the correctional officers out of the picture, mm-hmm. and to interact with folks that day. One of the amazing things that we found is that we could have troublesome inmates within that facility, but they would do whatever they had to do. I mean, the amount of violations just went down dramatically by the people participating. They would not do anything that would jeopardize spending time with their loved ones and especially their children. So I found that to be fascinating.
Yes.
So it's not only just something for the criminal justice system to consider from a criminological point of view, from a sociological point of view, it's something that the wardens of institutions need to consider from the standpoint of peace and security within their own institutions.
Absolutely. And that is sometimes some of the constraints about even visitation, because in some facilities they allow it, in other facilities they don't, and it depends on the crime that was committed as well. So you have to navigate all of those type of things when you're working with incarcerated parents, and it can sometimes make it difficult. But I believe all throughout the country, people in child welfare, working in child welfare, are recognizing the importance of, you know, let's don't hold biases against parents because they're incarcerated. It is key, and we need to figure out ways in which we can allow the interaction to take place. Some prisons offer Skype, you know, where the kids can have opportunities to visit their parents through Skype. So we're just trying to find innovative ways in which we can keep that connection going.
Two things come to mind. Number one, especially in the District of Columbia, our offenders enter into the federal prison system. Yes. We don't have local prisons anymore. So at one time, the District of Columbia had Lorton. It was close mm-hmm. by. It was in Virginia. Now you have D.C. inmates going thousands of miles mm-hmm. away from home. I mean, their agreement was years ago when they federalized everything was to try to have them within 500 miles. But in the reality, they're going to be going all over the country.
Right.
So contacting them is difficult. But having said that, the example that I just gave a couple minutes ago, when I worked for the state of Maryland, you had inmates from Baltimore, and they were incarcerated in Hagerstown. It's an hour and a half, 2 hours
yes.
away. For many people, many family members, it was as if they were on the other side of the moon. Mm-hmm. We have them in rural areas spread all throughout the state mm-hmm. of Maryland, which requires hundreds of miles of travel, even in a small state like the state of Maryland. Right. So part of it is the physical distance. That the part of it is the difficulty, correct?
Right. Absolutely. And with that being said, I believe that now most jurisdictions are finding creative ways in which to not have that be a barrier for the connection and for the family. Because when you think about reunification, it doesn't necessarily mean that child is going to be reunified. It's broader than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more so about maintaining that connection.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is so key. And if you do have a parent that's in a Texas facility, what do you do as the social worker on the case to ensure? You may not get to have monthly visits, but maybe quarterly there's an opportunity to take the child or the children to visit the parent that's incarcerated out of state.
I know some jurisdictions are now going to tablets and are having FaceTime
yes.
conversations with their family members via mm-hmm. a tablet that is given out by the administration. Mm-hmm. So there are innovative ways of keeping family members in touch.
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, not to beat this point to death, but there are real pieces of evidence, research that shows that in terms of that 8-year-old boy, 8-year-old girl, mm-hmm. and in terms of the inmate behind bars, it has very meaningful, positive effects on all of them to stay in touch with each other.
That is so true. And research bears that out, as well as just people working in this environment. They recognize that children want to know where they come from,
mm-hmm.
who they come from,
mm-hmm.
that this person, they want to be able to know what that person looks like,
mm-hmm.
what that person sounds like. It makes a great difference. Even if they recognize that there's no opportunity for that person to be in their lives on a daily basis, just knowing where they come from, you know, being a part of a father or a mother that they may not have had a lot of contact with, but it eases them. It releases a certain amount of their angst and trauma also. And we have found that more and more in this profession, in the child welfare profession, that children that don't have the connection with their birth families, they have a more difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
As far as development, as far as maintaining their mental health stability,
mm-hmm.
they deal with a lot more trauma.
Well, I do want to get on to what happens to the kids who are left behind in the process, because
mm-hmm.
according to the data that I've seen, the great majority of people who are involved in prison systems are parents.
Right.
And they leave behind, in most cases, minor kids.
Mm-hmm.
So there is obviously that disconnect. And those minor kids, the research does seem to indicate that they have higher rates of substance abuse, higher rates
yes.
of mental health problems. So if we're going to ever break the cycle. Mm-hmm. Part of that process of breaking the cycle is to ensure that families are kept together or as reunified as possible.
Right, absolutely. And I was also going to add that it's just been proven over and over again. And a lot of that, Leonard, has to do with our own personal values, our personal judgments, and our biases, mm-hmm. About people who are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. But you have to look beyond all that because in the eyes of that child or that youth, because it could be an older youth, like 14, 15, 16.
Oh, it could be 19,
absolutely.
20, 24.
We have to push aside all of that because at the end of the day, it's what's in the best interest of the child or the youth.
Now that we've set that foundation, mm-hmm. I want to go to the other part of the continuum, and this is why people are somewhat confused when they hear family reunification, mm-hmm. is that sometimes the families themselves are the problem. In terms of fathers who did not take care of the mm-hmm. kids, fathers who possibly beat mothers, mm-hmm. mothers who may have ignored the kids, and they end up in the prison system. I've interviewed before these microphones, oh, heavens, probably 30, 40 women mm-hmm. caught up in the criminal justice system. Virtually all tell stories of family dysfunction,
right.
Of violence, and in many cases, sexual violence directed towards them as children. Mm-hmm. So we have that part of it as well, that part of the complexity as well. But the interesting part is that even though they went through that experience and now they're part of the criminal justice system, and even though they have animosity and or blame towards their mother or their fathers, they still want contact.
Absolutely. Sometimes you may have horrendous things that are done to children by their parents, but they still want that connection.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
They still need that connection.
They
There's
need
something
it.
Something psychologically deep within us that needs that connection with us. If nothing else, to say why.
Exactly.
If nothing else, to say why not. If nothing mm-hmm. else, then to have that conversation.
Right. And also because they love their parents. It's instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is a lot of times when parents are incarcerated, children just want to know that their parents are okay. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even though they are told, they may have done this, they may have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the eyes of that child or that youth, they just want to be able to make sure that the parent is okay.
At least be able to see them, if
yes.
nothing else, through a tablet, if nothing
yes.
else. Now, we do closed-circuit television
mm-hmm.
here. We're experimenting with that in terms of family reunification mm-hmm. here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. It's a small pilot program, but that's what we're trying to do is to figure out the best way to make sure that families do remain reunified with people who are spread out throughout the United States. But that's complex. It's complex because of the family history. It's complex because of the family animosities. It's complex because of the distance. And it's complex because of the technology. The technology may be the saving grace.
Yes.
If we start using tablets, start using smartphones that are approved and provided to that inmate, and they have face-to-face contact with wives and kids or husbands, that could make things better.
Yes.
And that's,
I agree.
That's the bottom line of all
yes.
this, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The bottom line.
Let's shift gears and,
okay.
and go over to the kids. Now, the kids become the innocent part of much of bad behavior.
Right.
They're the ones who are left home. They're the ones who are ignored. They're the ones. A lot of families are one-parent households. I think President Obama, in terms of his latest research in terms of the condition of youth, starts talking about the immense number of people, kids, who are living just with one parent.
Right.
If that one parent goes to prison, what do? They're sent off to grandmom. They're sent off to auntie. They're sent. I mean, this is a real problem. We're talking about 2 million people in prison. We're talking about up to 10 million kids mm-hmm. left behind.
Right.
And the impact of incarceration, what that means on their lives. They're just not losing their father.
Right.
In many cases, they're losing everything.
But one of the good things that we have noted in child welfare, and I think this is across most jurisdictions, is the fact that now what jurisdictions are doing now is ensuring that most of our kids end up with relatives.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great because I could say even as far back as 10 years ago, that wasn't happening.
Okay.
They ended up in stranger foster care.
Right.
But now the trend is definitely, and it's a good thing, that children are being placed in foster care settings, but it's with family members. And so this allows more children to have access to their bio parents.
We need to talk more about this because I'm extremely concerned with what's happening with the kids who are left behind. But, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Wanda Tolliver today, the interim deputy director of Program Operations for Child and Family Services Agency in Washington, D.C., www.cfsa.gov, www.cfsa.gov. This radio show follows a television show that we did on family reunification, and one of the things that everybody involved in that television show was talking about was what happens to the kids, the devastating impact of what happens, even if they're going to their aunts, even if they're going to their uncles, even if they're going over to grandmom and granddad's house. They, in many cases, have been abandoned. Now, a certain percentage of them do go to the other parent, but there's got to be a point where they sit back, they're 8 years old. It has huge economic ramifications for them. It has huge personal and emotional ramifications for them. Regardless as to what dad did, dad remains dad. So what we're talking about, and I've never seen a firm figure on it, but let's just say out of two, if there are 2 million people locked up behind bars, it's certainly double, triple, quadruple that number. So let's just say 8 million kids. That's a huge burden on our society for those 8 million kids to be sitting there going, I didn't ask for this. Now what's going to happen to me?
Absolutely. And the thing that is more troubling than that is the fact that once parents are incarcerated, society feels that they should go away. That's what's troubling.
But they did go away. We sent them away.
We sent them away, but there's an opportunity to keep that engagement for the children's sake, right?
Oh,
give them opportunities to engage.
Absolutely. I think that a big part of why we have the problem that we do is because we've ignored the kids over decades. We have built a gazillion prison cells. We have put billions and hundreds of billions of dollars in terms of building prisons all throughout the United States. The rate of increase in the of incarceration in the United States has been astronomical. But we've done nothing about the kids that are left behind.
Right.
And I think that's a social problem that may explain why we continuously have problems. You can't take mom and dad away without there being ramifications. But there is little for the kids who are left behind, correct?
Very little. But it's getting better, but it's not at the rapid pace that it needs to be because, you know, over time I can see where it's better than it was 2 years ago with them offering like Skype. But not all systems, prison systems, offer these type of things.
But not all communities offer these kind of things either. I mean, the one of the things that shocked me when I was talking to two individuals who had parents who were incarcerated, one's now working for us at Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, one started her own scholarship fund for children of incarcerated parents. You know, these are all very encouraging things, but all of us pretty much agreed that there is little left in the community that brings these kids together with other kids who have incarcerated parents to talk about what's going on in their
You're
lives.
Right.
They're the ones that feel alone. They're the ones who feel shut out. They're the ones who feel abandoned. They're the ones who feel stigmatized. They're the ones where kids make fun of them. And now, I mean, at 8, 9 years old, that's a burden nobody should have to carry.
Absolutely.
So the question now becomes, is it the prison system's responsibility to deal with the kids, or is it the community's responsibility to deal with the kids?
Or is it a combination of both?
Yes.
Yes, I would agree with that. We need to do more.
We throughout the country need to do more to focus on kids with incarcerated parents.
Yes,
definitely. Because they have their own unique needs. They need to talk this stuff through.
Yes.
When I talk to the two people who came from parents of incarcerated children, who, again, doing very well now, they said that they felt so alone and ignored by everybody because they were going through something unique, and they desperately needed to talk about it. They desperately needed to talk about it with trained counselors or their peers, but there was nothing.
Right. I agree.
And people throughout the country need to start focusing on this, correct?
Yes.
Okay. But the criminal justice system and the social services system is overburdened. Because, I mean, you're the Child and Family Services Agency in Washington, D.C. You've got to be so overburdened with cases and needs that, and all of us in the criminal justice system, social services system, we're all overburdened. Now, Leonard Sipes and Wanda Tolliver is asking everybody to take on yet additional work.
But we need to find a way, because if we can help with this situation, then the recidivism and or the generational of kids following in the same pathway, we could ease some of that.
Yes,
but we
could.
Have to recognize that it's a problem, it's an issue that we have to come up with some solutions around.
I mean, there's a human part of it. It's simply, you know, again, I keep, every time I do a radio show, every time I do a television show, I have an image of the person that I'm talking to.
Yes.
And I have an image of the person who I'm talking about. And I see this 8-year-old kid sitting there saying, "What did I do?"
Right.
Why do I have to deal with this? This is unfair. I don't like this. I'm angry.
And especially, Leonard, when the father, the parent, whether it's a father, whether it's a mom, when they disappear into the criminal justice system, incarceration, and the children don't have any contact.
Yeah.
That's when they really feel like, what did I do? What happened? They need some type of reassurance that it's not their fault and that their parent is okay.
Mom is still mom, dad is still dad.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter what they've done. Mom
exactly.
is still mom and dad is still dad. And
yes.
we in the criminal justice system need to come to grips with that.
Exactly. Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
But again, we're saying we're so overcrowded in our prison systems.
Yes.
Our parole and probation agents throughout the country are handling caseloads of at least 150 to 1. In Washington, D.C., I always remind people it's 50 to 1. We're a federal agency, and we have the funds, thank God, to offer those lower caseloads. But most people within the criminal justice system it's like, again, Leonard convinced us because we don't have the capacity. We're barely dealing with what it is that we have to deal with now.
Right.
You're going to have to go a long way in convincing us that family reunification is a real issue. And the people that I talk to before doing radio and television shows, because I try to get the opinions of different people, that's their point of view.
Yes.
They're saying, don't ask us to take on anything more, please.
Right. And I would even say that a lot of, maybe some social workers feel that way too. Really? You want us to take them, 200 miles to see a parent? But at the end of the day, as we, child welfare systems are becoming more trauma-informed, right? And which is a great thing. And realizing that if we don't do this, we are putting more trauma on this child.
It's a pay-me-now or pay-me-later sort of a scenario.
You pay at the front end or pay at the back end.
But in the young lady who created scholarships at CHIPS, she said it was her Girl Scout troop that saved her. And come to find out within their Girl Scout troop that there were other kids whose parents were incarcerated. So now it's, I just don't want to throw the burden on us, those of us in social services or those of us within the criminal justice system. I think the issue needs to go out to churches, to mosques, to synagogues, to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, to
school systems,
to Little League, to across the board, there may be opportunities. opportunities to engage these kids in conversations that they desperately need to have.
Yes.
Because I'm told that the biggest problem in this is that they have no place to go to talk through their problems because they need another child whose parent is incarcerated to commiserate with.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Maybe all we need to do is just set up those opportunities.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I agree.
But they also need, at the same time, professional counseling in some cases.
Yes.
They need to work through the anger.
Yes.
They need to work through the harm. They need to work through the abandonment.
Yes. And we are recognizing that as a child welfare system as well, whether the children are in foster care or whether they're in the home, but with some child welfare oversight, that it's critical that they receive some type of therapeutic intervention in which to process the information.
Because sometimes kids don't provide the best of advice.
Right.
Sometimes you do need a trained counselor to help them work through the anger and the frustration of now living with their grandparents or now living in poverty or now living. You know, their help needs to be there. I mean, you know, there's no website for them to go to.
No.
I mean, in this day and age of social media, there's no social media site. There's no Facebook page. It's just a barren wasteland. Some people have said we are completely ignoring millions upon millions of abandoned kids.
Right.
They don't even have a place to go to on the web.
Right. So what can we do?
I don't know. That's the question.
We have to find a way to do something different.
That's why when I talk to my counterparts in the criminal justice system, it is, oh, please let her don't ask us to take on yet another issue. And it's like, but, you know, if we don't take this issue on, we're lost.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things that the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency is doing this year, we really are asking families for help. We really understand that the family for reentry is a critical component, and that's one of the themes that we're running with this year. But I don't see that articulated by a lot of parole and probation agencies, that we're recognizing that family reunification is an issue for supervision success.
Yes.
And why don't other people?
Right.
It's a question.
It's a question. We need an answer.
I don't know. But I mean, it is in the final analysis. We have some research from the Urban Institute, and we have some research from other organizations, and we have people like you and me talking about it. And we did a television show on it, and it's now being discussed, and we've recognized it as a priority. But I just don't get the sense that in parole and probation, it is that much of an issue. I don't get the sense that in social sciences and social services, it's that much of an issue.
Right. And we have to be honest and recognize that sometimes they are burdened with, you, as you said, a high caseload, or they have a different agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important that the agenda include the well-being of children.
Mm-hmm. But I do think that President Obama has made it a point to talk about that.
Yes.
And so now between the administration and some agencies, it is being discussed for the first time. I just find it not whimsical. I don't want to use that word. I just find it distressing somewhere in between.
Yeah.
When I talk to my peers and they're going, family what? Oh, you mean connecting the kid with the inmate? Yeah, that's something we should do. And that's it. And it doesn't go beyond that. So the bottom line is somehow, we need to convince everybody to get involved in this.
Yes.
We need to convince the churches.
Yes.
The little leagues.
Yes.
Everybody.
The school system.
Maybe we should do a national campaign.
I agree.
You know, don't leave anybody behind.
Right.
Because it's going to have ramifications for you in the future. Another phrase came to mind, but you can't say that on government podcasts. Wanda, it's been wonderful talking to you today.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wanda Tolliver, she is the Interim Deputy Director of Program Operations for Child and Family Services Agency in Washington, D.C., www.cfsa.gov, www.cfsa.gov. Ladies and gentlemen, this is D.C. Public Safety. We appreciate your comments. We even appreciate your criticisms, and we want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.